item is the triennial review.
Right, and I did make sure that I saved some copies for you guys. I don't know if the triennial review staff report was actually in your agenda packages. It wasn't. Yeah, it was a miss. So there you've got that. And you will also see you should have three documents. One is the triennial review staff report, which is available online. You will find a revised list with our tentative ranking in them. And then you will see a white paper on outstanding natural resource waters that we've just provided for backup, because it's something that will be discussed briefly in this triennial review staff report. Okay, again, I'm Holly Lundborg, lead with the basin planning staff. Lauren Clyde was going to give this presentation today, but she had family issues and was not able to come. And I think you're all going to be sorry, because she had a very, very polished presentation. Triennial review, it's a legal requirement. This is what we're going to hopefully accomplish today, is go through the schedule and mainly get comments from you guys after we lay out what our straw man for rankings are. Legal requirements, we talked about this a couple of months ago. It's required both under the Basin Plan and Porter Cologne. Hence the name Triennial Review. Now, these bullets that you see in front of you, technical ranking factors, Region 9, down in the southern part of the state, has developed an actual form for ranking their issues, and it takes into account these sorts of considerations. And then everything gets a number, and then we rank them that way. We're going to see about how that works. We haven't done that in the past, but it would be nice to have some sort of a very transparent process in place so people know why we rank things the way we did. So the first seven issues that you see here are issues that were called out in the 2004 triennial review. The number and parents behind it was the priority. All seven of these activities are actually being worked on currently by staff. We just talked about the sediment amendment. You guys are aware of the stream and wetlands protection. The low threat discharge is a high priority for both core regulatory, for municipalities, and for EPA. We are currently working on that, and have just CEQA scoped it. TMDL implementation plans has been on the list and will continue to stay on the list, just so you know, just to remind you that both the Scott and the Shasta TMDL implementation plans were adopted in the 2004-2007 series, and we will have the Klamath TMDL implementation plan coming to you in this next 2007-2010. The editorial amendment, while it ranked relatively low, is a high priority for us because there's going to be a lot of money, about $1 million, given at the state board level to clean up the basin plans, get them in some sort of desktop publishing so that they're not Word and they're not crazy. So I want to make sure that the basin plan is in good shape before we send it off. Things that need to be fixed are outdated references to the non-point source policy, action plans that are no longer in effect because their waiver has disappeared. The DO and in-stream flow policies are both crucial for work that we're doing on the Klamath TMDL. Those have both been identified as major issues, so we're pursuing those as well. So the next step, the list that we would then, as I said, these are all currently underway. Hopefully will be done before too much longer, except for the Klamath TMDL, which will be 2010. The rest of these I'm hoping we have done in a year or so. So given that would then hopefully clear off our plate, we would then, as soon as those are done, move on to these issues. Narrative objectives for a narrative objective policy is kind of a two-part piece. Region 5 has adopted has developed a very fine document called Water Quality Goals. It provides clarity on what the legal limits are for a number of our objectives, so we would like to include that in the basin plan for consistency. The groundwater objective is a high priority for our cleanup crew. If you'll note in our basin plan, we have objectives relative to inland streams and groundwater and ocean water. There's a toxicity objective for streams and bays, but there is no such toxicity objective for groundwater, and the cleanup group has asked repeatedly that that be considered, given a high priority. Freshwater bacteria, as we know from those of us that are down in the Russian River area, is a significant issue, and it's also a high priority for staff, because we feel that health impacts need to be ranked relatively high, and we need to figure out some way to clarify what our role is and how we're going to implement a freshwater objective. Fish hatchery and a revision to the fish hatchery action plan is important. We spoke about that a little bit earlier this morning. It's hanging up permits, so we have some proposals that we're discussing internally how to tighten that action plan up by clarifying existing prohibitions and then tying it to effluent limits in the permit. Number 11 is what Chairman Corbett was referring to earlier. It's an exemption criteria for in-stream restoration projects. For example, the Trinity River is currently undergoing a lot of restoration activities, and some of the work will, in fact, undoubtedly result in short-term violations of some of our exceedances, some of our objectives. So we would hope to come to you with a list of criteria that we as staff think would be appropriate to, in specific cases when adopted by you, give them an out for specific objectives so that they can go ahead and do the work, because we would be deemed in the public interest. Ammonia objectives, again, a high priority with EPA and with our core regulatory group. And finally, mixing zone policy is something that the Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, has asked us to consider, and I think it's a high priority for some of our larger dischargers. So you will see the list that you have. I don't know if I kept myself one. The tentative ranking list you will see has the ranks that staff has recommended. So what I would ask is that, and just to let you know, we sent that list out blank to the public in this and to agencies and to staff, and have gotten a number of checklists filled out with staff's comments. So I would recommend that you guys think about that too, figure out a way to how best to communicate what your needs may be, so that when I come back or when Lauren comes back to present this to you, hopefully in October, that we'll have at least made sure that we have solicited your input to make sure that we are ranking things in a way that is going to be fruitful for discussion. So with that said, the initial staff report was released on June 18th. We opened the official period at that point. We're holding our workshop today. We will be releasing our final, or the staff report that builds upon this document. It will actually lay out what we think as at the staff level are our recommended options once we've gotten further, our recommended priority list. We will release that as part of our staff report. The public comment period will close on the 21st, and we will have a public hearing in Weaverville, hopefully, in October, when you will then either adopt the list as we proposed it, make changes to the list, or ask us to go back, reconsider, and bring back to you for further consideration. So, like I said, Lauren had a very, very nice presentation, and I've roughed through it and have given her a disservice by that. But again, as I said earlier, if anybody, board, public, staff, have any questions about this, please feel free to contact me, and I can walk you through in more depth with what the process is.
All right. Any board member questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. For instance, I'm looking at the new tentative rankings for, let's say, number 7 and number 6, the view objectives and the in-stream flow policy. Are those specifically tied to the Klamath TMDL, or are these region-wide?
They would be region-wide, with site-specific objectives for DO, possibly as part of the Klamath. But at this point, we are pursuing a regional-wide approach for both of those.
Well, a lot of these would be tied, I guess, specifically to other river system TMDLs, too.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. We'll thank you for your presentation. Dan Gilbert.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Dan Gilder. I'm here on behalf of the Environmental Law Foundation and 8 other groups that back in April sent you a letter asking that you designate the Wild and Scenic River segments in your jurisdiction as outstanding national resource waters. And I see that staff prepared a little fact sheet for you, so recommend that you take a look at that. I just want to renew that request. Unfortunately, it seems the staff is funneling this through the basin planning process and the triennial review process, and I don't think that you're necessarily limited to that specifically. Water Code Section 13243 provides that you can designate areas where discharges will not be permitted either through the basin planning process or through individual waste discharge requirements. And I submit that if you do go down this road of just doing this the basin planning process, you'll be hearing a lot from us every single time a permit comes up on these river segments saying this needs to be designated as a wild and scenic river or as an outstanding national resource water. So to save effort on all parties, to give clarity to the discharges, to staff, and to the public, I think this needs to be addressed pretty quickly. And I don't think it's going to take a lot of work for you to do this. These river segments come to you with a presumption that these are outstanding national resource waters. The work to characterize their ecological and recreational significance has already been done by the parties, either the state itself or the Department of Interior, in designating these as wild and scenic rivers. So this should be a slam dunk for you. And I see the current draft ranking is 19 with like little asterisks next to it saying we haven't really thought about where we should put this. Obviously, we'll be sending in comments during the public comment period suggesting that it should be higher. And just wanted to let the board know that. Thank you.
Any board member comments or questions? Matt?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. I think that my concern here is with the wildlife refuges. If we happen to have adjacent wildlife refuges next to each other, you know, for instance, we have not far from here in the Klamath Basin, we've got the Tule Lake wildlife. And when we have more than 1 million waterfowl, each one discharging stuff into the water, and if that then goes downstream, we could have a wildlife refuge. If there are two adjacent wildlife refuges to each other, one violating another. So I'm just kind of curious how that would play into if we were to have like grasslands, because we have a grasslands area next to a wildlife refuge. Any thoughts on that?
And the water is being polluted by
the ducks.
Ducks and then that's
geese and other things.
Well,
when you have 1 million birds and they all
right. The designation as an outstanding national resource water
right.
takes or is part and parcel of your implementation of the anti-degradation policy. If you're permitting that discharge from the grassland to the wetland, then this would come into play. But unless you're considering this within a permitting process, within implementation of your anti-deg policy, I don't think this would necessarily impact it. But I'm not clear on what you're asking.
Well, I think let me clarify my stance. I look at all of our waters, especially in this area, in our region, as outstanding national resources. I mean, that's just, and we have an obligation to keep the waters of our state in as good a condition as possible. So to try and elevate, for instance, certain waters to a higher standard, I think, is kind of redundant because we're already concerned with all of our waters. And I would imagine that my fellow board members would feel the same way.
I'm heartened to hear that. The issue, though, is that under the Clean Water Act and the Port of Portland Act, you don't have to. There's no requirement for you to maintain existing waters. You can let up to the existing water quality up to a certain water quality standard. The water quality standard is the backstop. That's where you need to go, or that's the lowest that you can go. What the Tier 3 level protection of the anti-dike policy allows you to do is implement the policy, as you said, that these are outstanding national resource waters, and we're not going to let any water quality degradation occur in these.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. We have on Steve Turk from the California Department of Fish and Game. After that, Felice Pace. After that, Daniel Myers, and then Jim Dupree.
Well, since it's getting late, I'll make it real short and sweet. We're really pleased to see that staff has included the policy, revising the policy on regulation of fish hatcheries and fish rearing facilities in the top 10 rank here. For us, it's the number one rank here. It's real critical for us to get this issue addressed over the next few years in the triennial review so that we can ultimately maintain our hatchery operations for our mitigation hatcheries for salmon and steelhead. And I believe there's five that are under the purview of the your board. So it's critical for us, and I support it, and we urge the board to keep that as a top priority for this review.
Certainly can't speak for the board, but I do know for myself I've been working very hard for the last 6 months to have this be a very high priority, because I didn't want us in the position of you being sued, we being sued, and not having a ready answer and solution. So I agree with you, this is pretty critical.
Thank you.
Okay, Felice Pace. Going once, twice, three times. Daniel Myers.
Daniel Myers, Sierra Club, again. When I looked at this document and the TMDL indices, there's four of them in the back, I thought I might have overstated the case this morning about the TMDLs, the progress and the need for additional staffing, but I checked it out with staff, and what I presented was correct. What these four indices have in common is that all these TMDLs should go in the basin plan. That's the eventual goal. The other thing that's common to these four different indices is that none of them have implementation plans. It's implied, I think, in some of the language that differentiates these, but that is the case. So we have 82 segments that have no implementation plans. In the next 3 years of the triennial process, maybe we'll get three of them into the basin plan. And during that same period, we'll probably get 10 new listings from the 303D listing, and we will continue to get deeper and deeper into the hole because we don't have enough staff to deal with the problem. I rest my case.
Thank you. Jim Dupree from Siskiyou County.
Actually, I'm going to pass.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who turned in a slipper? Okay. Is there anyone else? Going once, twice, three times. Okay, we'll call Regina.
Chichazola?
Chichazola. Yes, good job. Two things. One is I feel like the bacteria and health effects should be higher in the list, because obviously that's extremely important. Second, I wanted to say that when we are looking at the hatcheries, I think the goal needs to be making sure the hatcheries are as cleanly run as possible and not just making sure that we change the basin plan to allow the discharges that are now illegal. And then lastly, I wanted to just let this board know that in this process, I've asked that the whole Klamath River from Beaver Creek down be listed for sediment, and there's a good case for that. And so I'm going to continue to send in as much information as I can on that. And you will be able to review that. And also toxic algae you're moving for, but you already have that information. Thank you.
Okay, any board member comments or questions? Okay. We'll take it back to the board. Any board member comments?
Mr. Chair, I would like to say to Mr. Myers from the Sierra Club that in my tenure on this board, I am seeing our PUI, our personnel body of personnel, reduced by about 20%. I would agree with you that by 30%? Okay, by 30%. I would agree with you that we need more. But it is unfortunately, I'm sure you're aware, not something that we can do with this board. So it is in a world where we are arguing over budgets, that's where we need to put the emphasis.
Okay. Any other board member comments or suggestions? Okay, I just had one. I think you'll notice you got a complete review of beneficial uses, then a lower priority, another beneficial use issue. I put them together. And two, it has a fairly low ranking, and there is a state board order that we're supposed to review it. And so I would hope that you might want to take a look at that. That's all.
Quite catch what was the last one that you would move
the
up?
State board in approving the Scott TMDL mandated that we at the regional level have greater specification of cultural beneficial uses.
Okay.
And then that got put into the triennial review, and where we need to do is make sure we're not being unresponsive to the state board. That's, and again, it will be a general, not specific to any one area. Any other questions or comments? Then I believe we're for, do the board members have any suggestions to go on the agenda?
Shorter meetings.
In that spirit, I will adjourn the meeting unless I hear an objection.
Stop.